At first, it was a joke between us. My wife didn't care if I cheated as long as I came home before 2 a.m. No questions, no fights, no drama. It was our unspoken deal, an arrangement built on convenience, not connection. I thought I had the perfect setup, freedom without consequences. But everything changed the night I met her. She wasn't just another fling. She was chaos, wrapped in silk, tenderness laced with danger. With her, I felt something I hadn't felt in years. Wanted, seen, alive. One taste of her attention, and I started ignoring the clock. By the time 2 a.m. rolled around, I didn't want to go home. In fact, I didn't want to go back at all. But falling for her came with a cost, one I never saw coming. And by the time I realized what she really wanted, it was too late. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. I used to think I understood freedom. It wasn't something I had to fight for. It was handed to me the day my wife, Carla, looked me straight in the eye, no tears, no trembling, and said, "Just be home by 2. Not 2:01. Not with perfume on your collar, just by 2, every time. No questions asked." Most men would be suspicious of that kind of offer. Me? I thought I'd hit the jackpot. We'd been married almost 10 years. Somewhere between promotions, IVF treatments that didn't take, and the steady erosion of passion, we stopped trying. We didn't talk about it. We just pivoted. I started working late more often. She started traveling for business. We had matching secrets sealed in silence. And somehow, that made things easier, less emotional. We weren't in love, but we weren't in war either. We were in agreement. That was the game. And I played it well. Her name was Summer. No last name, not at first. Just Summer. I met her at a rooftop bar in downtown Atlanta. It was a humid Friday night in July, and the city buzzed like it was alive. I was out with Greg and Marcus, two co-workers who knew the deal. We joked, drank too much bourbon, scanned the scene. Greg pointed her out first. "That's not a woman," he said. "That's a storm in heels." He wasn't wrong. Summer stood alone at the edge of the balcony, red dress clinging to her like a second skin. She wasn't the loudest or flashiest woman in the place, but something about her pulled your focus like gravity. Hair up, sharp eyes, full lips that looked like they kept secrets for sport. And when she caught me looking, she didn't smile. She just tilted her head like she was cataloging me, like I was an exhibit she might touch or destroy. We talked for 10 minutes before she asked if I was married. I didn't lie. "Yeah," I said, "but it's complicated." She didn't flinch, just sipped her drink and said, "Aren't they all?" We didn't have sex that night. That's what shocked me. We talked until last call. She asked questions most women didn't, real ones, about regret, about fear, about what kept me up at night. And for the first time in years, I told the truth. That night, I got home at 1:57 a.m., Carla was in bed, watching a documentary with her AirPods in. She glanced at me when I walked in, checked the clock, then looked away. No words, no questions, no judgment. The game continued, but Summer didn't disappear like the others. She texted the next morning. "Still complicated?" I replied, "Always." She said, "Then let's make it worse." We started meeting every Thursday, different places, same fire. It wasn't just sex. Though the sex was something else, it was psychological. She knew exactly how to disarm me. She'd touch my hand and then drop it like she was pulling away from something dangerous. She'd whisper things in my ear like, "Do you ever wonder who you'd be if no one was watching?" Summer didn't want to be my side piece. She wanted to be my mirror, and what I saw in that mirror scared the hell out of me. I started forgetting the rules. One night, I didn't check the time until 2:12 a.m., Carla was asleep, or pretending to be, still no words. But something in the air had changed. Then came the night Summer asked to see where I lived. "No," I said too quickly. Her lips curled. "You ashamed of her?" I didn't answer. She stepped closer, hands on my chest. "Or are you afraid you'll never want to go back once I'm inside?" The next morning, I woke up to a text from Carla. "Dinner tonight. No excuses. Yediotus." She never sent messages like that. Ever. I walked into our house that evening and found her wearing a red silk dress, the kind she hadn't worn in years. The dining room table was set with candles, steak, wine, my favorite dessert. She didn't ask where I'd been. She didn't touch her food, just watched me while I ate. Then she said, "You're seeing someone. And this time, it's not just sex." I froze. She raised her glass. "So, be honest with me. Is she worth breaking the rules for?" I wanted to lie. I almost did. But something in me cracked. "I don't know," I said quietly. She laughed, cold and sharp. "That's the thing about freedom, baby. It comes with a leash. You just didn't feel it till you tried to run." She stood, took her glass, and walked to the kitchen. That night, I couldn't sleep. My phone buzzed at 3:12 a.m. It was Summer, a photo. She was standing outside my house, under the streetlight, smiling. There are moments that don't feel real when they happen. You stare at them, freeze-framed in time, while your body goes numb, as if your brain hasn't caught up with the danger yet. That's how I felt, staring at the photo of Summer outside my house. Same red dress, same knowing smile, standing beneath the streetlight like she owned the street, the sidewalk, the night. Like she was daring me to deny it, daring me to lie again. I didn't move for a full minute, just sat there, my thumb hovering above the screen, as my heart beat a little faster. When I finally stepped to the window, she was gone. No car, no sound, just stillness and shadows. I didn't tell Carla. We barely spoke the next morning. She drank her coffee and scrolled through emails. I grabbed my keys and left early for work, trying not to look as shaken as I felt. By noon, Summer texted again. "Why didn't you invite me in?" I didn't respond, so she sent another. "You don't get to hide parts of yourself from me anymore. That's not how this works." The possessiveness, the control, the confidence that she had a right to more. That was new. This wasn't the woman I met on that rooftop. This was something else. I pulled into a parking garage and just sat in the car, trying to think. This had gone too far. I needed space. I needed control again. I texted back, "I think we should take a break." She replied almost instantly, "You can take a break from lies, not from me." That night, I didn't go home. I drove around aimlessly until past midnight, my mind looping worst-case scenarios. What if she showed up again? What if she knocked? What if Carla answered? When I finally pulled into the driveway, all the lights were off. I crept into the bedroom like a teenager who broke curfew. Carla stirred but didn't say a word. I stared at the ceiling in the dark, wondering what part of me was unraveling, what part Summer had managed to pull loose. 2 days later, a letter showed up at my office. No envelope, just a folded piece of paper slipped under my door. No signature, just 4 words, written in perfect script. "I met your wife." My stomach dropped. I locked the door behind me, read the words again, and felt cold sweat bead on my forehead. This couldn't be real. Carla would have said something, wouldn't she? Unless she was playing her own game now. I drove straight home, heart pounding, half expecting chaos. But everything was normal. Carla was on the patio, barefoot, sipping white wine, humming along to some old Erykah Badu track. I stood in the doorway, unsure how to start. She glanced at me. "You look pale. Long day?" I stared at her. "Did someone talk to you?" She raised an eyebrow. "You'll have to be more specific." "Someone, a woman. Did anyone come here? Ask questions?" Carla didn't blink, just took another sip. "If they had," she said slowly, "don't you think you'd already know the answer?" I didn't sleep again that night, not because I was afraid, but because I realized I'd lost something crucial, control. Summer wasn't like the others. She didn't want to be a secret. She wanted to take over. The next day, Marcus pulled me aside at the office. "Hey man, everything cool?" "Yeah, why?" He hesitated. "Some chick came by last night, said she was your assistant. Tall, red dress. Left something in the lobby. Thought it was weird." I ran to the front desk. The receptionist handed me a black envelope with my name in gold lettering. Inside was a single photo. Me, sleeping in bed, The window in the background confirmed it was my bedroom. I flipped the photo over. "You sleep like a liar." I rushed home, ripped open every closet, checked under the bed, searched for cameras. Nothing. Carla watched from the hallway, arms crossed. "What exactly are you looking for?" she asked. I didn't answer. She stepped closer. "You brought her into our life. Now she's just making herself comfortable." The venom in her voice caught me off guard. "She hasn't been in the house," I said. Carla's expression didn't change. "Sure." Then she turned and walked away. Summer stopped texting for a week after that. It should have brought relief. Instead, it made me more paranoid. The silence felt like bait. And then, on a Thursday, just after midnight, I found a message on my bathroom mirror, written in lipstick. I didn't knock. I scrubbed the mirror for 20 minutes. Each swipe of the rag felt like erasing a fingerprint from a crime scene. My hands were shaking, not from fear exactly, but from something worse. Humiliation. Violation. She had been inside. Somehow, while I was asleep, or worse, while Carla and I both were, she entered our home, and she hadn't stolen anything. Number. She left something instead. A message. A promise. I didn't call the cops. What was I going to say? My affair partner broke into my house and wrote me a love note in lipstick. No one was going to believe that, not without dragging everything into the open. And I wasn't ready for that. I still believed, stupidly, that I could fix this before it broke me. But Carla wasn't fooled. She moved through the house like a ghost with purpose, silent, distant, yet fully aware of every movement I made. That night, she took off her wedding ring, didn't say a word, just placed it on the kitchen counter and went upstairs. Summer texted the next morning. "You saw it, didn't you?" I didn't reply. I wanted to, but I couldn't find the right words. No matter what I said, it would mean she was winning. She was inside my head. And my house. I changed the locks that day. Front door, back door, garage. I even installed cameras and motion detectors, bought smart locks and synced them to my phone. It made me feel better, but only for a moment. Because that night, the camera at the back gate caught her. Not trying to get in, just standing there, in the shadows. She didn't move, didn't wave, just stared up at the lens for 13 straight minutes before walking away. The video cut off as she disappeared into the dark like she'd never been there at all. That weekend, I booked a hotel, told Carla I was going on a work retreat, some leadership seminar garbage she didn't question. She looked at me for a long time before speaking. "You're not running from her," she said. "You're running from yourself." I had no answer for that. The hotel was quiet, high floor, double bolted door, perfectly impersonal. I turned off my phone and disconnected everything. For 48 hours, I didn't hear from Summer. No texts, no calls, no lipstick notes. I started to breathe again. Told myself maybe it was over. But when I checked out and opened my car door, there was something on the passenger seat. A single Polaroid photo. Summer, wearing Carla's red silk dress, standing in my kitchen, holding a knife, smiling. I drove straight home. The front door was locked. The kitchen was untouched. Carla was sitting on the couch, watching the same documentary from weeks ago. "You good?" she asked without looking at me. "Yeah," I lied. "Good, I made pasta." That night, I went online. I searched every record I could find on Summer. No last name, no verified number, burner phone, fake LinkedIn, no digital footprint, nothing real. I wasn't dating a woman. I was falling into a trap. On Monday, HR called me into the office, said a woman had shown up asking for me, said she caused a scene, security removed her. "She said she was your wife," the director whispered, "but we know that's not true." I nodded, humiliated. "Is everything okay at home?" "No," I said honestly. I tried confronting her. I drove to the rooftop bar where we met, asked the bartender if he'd seen her lately. He looked confused. "Who?" "Red dress. Name's Summer." He thought for a second, then shook his head. "Man, no one like that's been in here in months. She was here 4 weeks ago." He stared at me. "Bro, we haven't had the rooftop open since May. Elevator's been busted." It was July. The next morning, I received an email with no subject line. from unknown.sender@protonmail.com. Attachment, goodbye.mp4. I hesitated, then clicked. It was a video. Black screen at first, then static, then Summer sitting in my kitchen again. Only this time she wasn't smiling. She was crying, mascara down her cheeks, knife on the counter. She looked straight into the camera and whispered, "You said you'd leave her." Then the screen cut to black. I rushed home. Carla was gone, the bedroom ransacked, drawers empty. Her ring was still on the counter, but next to it was a note written in a different hand. "I told you, I met your wife." The house was quiet, too quiet. No footsteps, no soft hum from the fridge, no background noise from the TV Carla always left on, even when she wasn't watching. Just silence, thick, unnatural, and heavy, like it had weight. I stood there, staring at the note. "I told you, I met your wife." Every part of me wanted to scream, to flip furniture, to call someone, anyone, and ask what the hell was going on. But instead, I sat, in the middle of the living room floor, because suddenly, I didn't know where my wife was, or who Summer really was. And worse, I didn't know who I was anymore. I called Carla twice, straight to voicemail. I texted, no read receipts. I checked her credit cards, no recent charges. Her car was gone. I had no clue where she could be. And then I remembered something from weeks ago, something I had brushed off. That night she made me steak, wore the red dress, and asked, "Is she worth breaking the rules for?" Her eyes, they weren't angry, they were calculating. She already knew everything. I started digging. First, I went through Carla's closet, not because I expected to find anything new, but because I was desperate. Behind a shoebox on the top shelf, I found something I had never seen before. A burner phone, fully charged. It buzzed the moment I picked it up. New message, check the photos. My hands were shaking as I tapped into the gallery. Dozens of images, me and Summer, parking lots, hotel hallways, restaurant booths, Summer leaning into me, me brushing her hair back, me laughing. All of it, surveillance. The final image, Summer and Carla, together, sitting at a cafe, smiling, like old friends. I dropped the phone. Everything I thought I knew began to dissolve. Carla hadn't been blindsided. She wasn't the victim of my affair. She orchestrated it. She watched it unfold, maybe even engineered it. I tried retracing steps. I visited the cafe from the photo, sat outside, waited for someone to recognize either of them. Nobody did. Then I called Marcus. "I need to ask you something. Weird question." He laughed. "Man, after that scene with that chick last week, nothing surprises me." "No, listen. Have you ever met Summer before I introduced her?" Silence. Then, "Yeah, once. But I didn't think it was her. She came to the office months ago, said she was your wife's cousin." I hung up without another word. Cousin. Liar. Setup. Whatever she was, Summer wasn't a stranger. This wasn't seduction. It was entrapment. I searched the burner phone again. This time, I dug into the texts. Most were from a contact saved as S. Every message sounded like strategy. "He left at 11:42, 17 minutes late. He believes it's real. Push harder. Keep the red dress. It gets under his skin." But the last message changed everything. "End it. We got what we need." I drove to the police station. I didn't know what I planned to say. Part of me thought maybe Carla had snapped. Maybe Summer had gone too far. Maybe someone was in danger. But when I asked the desk sergeant if they had any reports involving my wife, he asked for her name. I told him, "Carla Jennings." He typed for a while, then looked up slowly. "Are you her husband?" "Yes," I said. He nodded, then slid a card across the desk. "Detective Ames wants to talk to you. He's been trying to reach you." Back in my car, I dialed the number. A gruff voice answered. "Mr. Jennings, took you long enough." "What's going on?" I asked. "Meet me at the precinct. We need to talk, in person." "About what?" There was a pause. "About Summer, or whatever her real name is." I met Detective Ames in a back room. Yellow folders, coffee stains, fluorescent lights. He didn't waste time. You've been in contact with a woman who goes by the name Summer. We believe her real name is Veronica Lane. You're not the first married man she's targeted. My mouth went dry. Targeted? He opened a folder. Mugshot. Black and white. Same eyes. Same smile. Summer. Veronica. Only colder. She's been linked to two disappearances. Both men. Both married. Both convinced they were in love with her. Both vanished within months of ending the relationship. I stared at the photo. She's dangerous? I asked. Ames leaned forward. She's calculated. She studies her victims, makes them feel seen. Then she takes what she wants and disappears. What about my wife? I asked. Carla. I think they knew each other. Ames narrowed his eyes. Carla Jennings. She came in 2 weeks ago, filed a restraining order, said you were being followed, stalked. We thought she was just scared. I froze. 2 weeks ago? He nodded. But she disappeared right after that. We've been trying to find her. I could barely speak. She left me a note, said she met Summer. Ames sighed. Then we're already too late. Detective Ames kept talking, but my mind had already left the room. Two men missing, a woman with a fake name. My wife vanished. And me, sitting in the center of it all like a puzzle piece that never belonged. You need to be straight with me, Ames said, pulling me back. How long were you seeing her? 2 months, I said. Maybe a little more. He gave me a look. That's more than enough. He handed me another file. Inside were copies of police reports, phone logs, witness statements. Two names circled in red ink. Anthony Roth, Deshaun Brewer, both men married. Both filed harassment complaints weeks before they disappeared. Both linked, just like me, to a woman named Summer, or Veronica Lane. And here's the twist. In both cases, their wives filed restraining orders against their own husbands shortly before the men vanished, just like Carla did. This can't be a coincidence, I said. Ames nodded. Number, it's a pattern. I flipped through photos. Veronica was in all of them. Slightly different hair, new names, but the eyes never changed. They were the same ones that watched me from across a rooftop bar weeks ago. The same eyes that smiled beneath my bedroom window. The same eyes in the Polaroid with the knife. She's not working alone, I whispered. Ames looked at me. No, he said. We think your wife was in on it. It all started making sense now. The deal Carla made with me. Be home by 2 a.m., no questions. The ring left on the counter. The burner phone, hidden but charged. The surveillance photos. The way she never panicked, never raised her voice, never acted like a woman losing her marriage, because she wasn't. She was setting a trap, and I walked right into it. But why? What could Carla possibly want bad enough to stage an affair, manipulate me, and partner with a sociopath? I drove home in silence. The house felt like a tomb now. Empty, cold, stripped of its meaning. I walked straight to the basement, the one place Carla always told me to stay out of. There's mold down there, she used to say. It's not safe. But I had to know. The door wasn't even locked. It was a storage space, but not for junk. Boxes stacked neatly, labeled with codes. I opened one. Inside, files, documents, photographs, marriage certificates, legal papers, all with different names, different faces, different states, fake identities. Each folder was a story. A fake wife, a fake man, a real marriage on paper, then a missing person report. Every time, it ended the same way. The wives vanished. The men were never found. And in every single file, tucked in the back, a photo of Veronica Lane. Sometimes blonde, sometimes brunette. Always watching. And then I found it. My own file. Labeled Jennings_3. Inside were photos of me and Carla on our wedding day. But something was off. The date listed, it was 3 years before we actually met. That's when it hit me. Carla and I never met by chance. The spilled coffee at the bookstore. The flirty conversation. The fast-track relationship. It was all staged. She had been playing a role from day one. I never married a woman. I married an assignment. Ames called that night. We traced the payment linked to Carla, he said. An offshore account in the Cayman Islands. She wired a large sum last week. How much? I asked. Seven figures. My knees buckled. Is she funding something? Ames exhaled. Number we think she's collecting. The next morning, I received a message from an unknown number. It was a video. Carla, alone, wearing the red silk dress. She looked into the camera with a softness I hadn't seen in years. "Hi, baby," she said. "You always wanted the truth, didn't you?" She sat down, crossed her legs, and leaned forward. "You were never meant to be the third, but you were the easiest." She smiled. "She picked you." Then silence. She leaned closer. "You'll never find her, and if you try, she'll make you disappear too." The screen cut to black. I was numb. I had been a pawn in something much bigger than infidelity. They weren't lovers. They were predators. But something in me had shifted. This wasn't about love or betrayal. This was about survival now. They wanted me to break. They wanted me to run. But I had no intention of disappearing. Not yet. I didn't sleep that night. Didn't eat either. I sat in my living room, my war zone, watching the walls breathe around me. Every detail in the house I once called home now felt like a prop in a show I didn't audition for. The red silk dress hanging in Carla's closet. The burner phone. The coded boxes in the basement. They weren't relics. They were weapons, used on me. But what they didn't expect? I was still here, and I had nothing left to lose. At 3:16 a.m., I opened the last file from the basement, Jennings 2. I had assumed Jennings underscore 3 meant I was the third man. I was wrong. Jennings wasn't a last name. It was a classification, a project, a system. Inside the Jennings underscore 2 file was a man named Caleb Monroe, black, early 40s, mid-level banking executive in Arizona, married a woman named Talia Jennings. Same smile as Carla, same eyes. According to the timeline, Caleb went missing in 2020. His car found abandoned, case unsolved. There were pictures too. One caught my eye, Caleb and Talia, Carla, standing in front of a cabin in the woods. Behind them, carved into the wooden siding, was the name of the property, Graywood. And I recognized the trees. I called Detective Ames. "Where's Graywood?" I asked. He hesitated. "Where did you hear that?" "I found it, in one of the files." Silence. Then, "It's a remote property just outside Asheville, North Carolina. Names popped up before. We think it's where they take the targets before they vanish. Problem is, no one's made it back from there. You're not going alone." "I wasn't asking for permission," I said. I left that night. No note, no goodbye, just rage. Graywood sat at the end of a narrow dirt road, surrounded by nothing but pine and silence. The trees stood tall like guards, keeping secrets rooted in soil soaked with history. The cabin looked abandoned from a distance, but I knew better. I parked the car half a mile out and made the rest of the walk on foot. No lights, no phone, just a flashlight and a steel pipe I kept in the trunk for emergencies. This counted. The front door was unlocked. I stepped inside. It smelled like cedar and old blood. Furniture was covered in sheets. Dust floated through the air like ghosts. But beneath the silence, I felt presence. Not human exactly, more like intention. The sense that I was expected. I checked every room. Nothing. Until I opened the door to the basement. There were no lights, just a descending staircase, creaking with every step. At the bottom, I found it. Photos, hundreds of them. Pinned to corkboards, taped to walls, clipped to string. Faces of men, smiling, unaware. Some had red X's over them. Some were circled in blue. One board was labeled, Phase 3, Eliminate or Reprogram. In the center of the wall, framed and larger than the rest, was my face. Number 10. No circle, just a single note pinned beneath. Still watching. Then I heard it, a soft creak behind me. I turned. Summer, standing in the shadows, dressed in black, no makeup, no games, just her. "Surprised it took you this long," she said. I raised the pipe. "You break into my house. You stalk me. You ruin my life. Why?" She stepped closer. "Because you needed it." "You think I needed to be destroyed?" She tilted her head. "You weren't living. You were coasting. We gave you something real. Fear is real. Chaos is real. You felt alive again. Admit it. I stared at her. You're sick. No, she said. I'm free. She lunged at me. I swung the pipe. It caught her arm and she stumbled back, but not far. She grabbed a scalpel from a nearby tray, God knows why it was even there, and slashed forward. We fought like people who had nothing left. No more games, no more sex, just war. I pinned her against the wall, the pipe pressed to her throat. I should kill you, I said, panting. She smiled through a split lip. But you won't. Footsteps upstairs. Another voice. Carla. I told you he'd come, she said, walking calmly down the stairs. Men always follow the scent of guilt. She looked different. No longer pretending. No apron. No pearls. No wife. Just a partner in crime, wearing boots and a leather jacket, like she was ready for battle. You used me, I said. She nodded. We chose you. There's a difference. I looked between them, my wife and my mistress, standing together like two sides of the same weapon. What do you want from me? I asked. Carla smiled, slow and cruel. To see if you're worth keeping. That was it, the final insult. I lunged again. This time I didn't hold back. The pipe struck Summer across the temple. She dropped. Carla stepped forward, hand on something at her waist, a knife. I loved you once, she said. No, you performed love, I replied, and I applauded. I knocked the blade from her hand and shoved her hard against the wall, breathless, furious. She just laughed. You think this ends with us? I tied them both up, called Ames, left the phone on speaker so he could track the signal. Then I set the whole basement on fire, every photo and every file, every trace of their system. I dragged them outside as the smoke billowed from Greywood's windows. Ames and his team arrived minutes later, guns drawn, sirens echoing through the trees. They were taken into custody. No more shadows, no more lipstick on mirrors, no more lies. But as they were being loaded into the squad cars, Carla turned to me, eyes calm, lips curled, and she whispered, "You passed." They were gone. Carla and Summer, Veronica, whatever her name truly was, taken in handcuffs into separate squad cars. No screams, no fight, just silence. And that smile, Carla's smile, right before the doors closed. You passed, she'd said. It echoed in my head like a ticking bomb. What did that mean? In the weeks that followed, I became two people. The man the world saw, quiet, compliant, grateful, a survivor. And the man no one saw, obsessed, unraveling the layers they left behind, because something didn't add up. Detective Ames told me they'd cracked the case wide open, that Carla and Veronica were part of a criminal ring targeting married men for blackmail, inheritance fraud, and, in some cases, lethal disappearance, that they'd found five other Greywood cabins across the country, all empty, all wiped clean. But none of it explained why me, why I was chosen, why I was left alive, why Carla didn't fight when I tied her up, and most of all, what did I pass? I returned to the house 2 weeks later, not because I missed it, because I needed closure. The locks were changed. The air smelled different, stale and foreign. Still, I moved through it slowly, room by room, like a man combing through ashes. When I reached the bedroom, something stopped me. On Carla's nightstand, untouched through it all, was a small velvet box. Inside, a flash drive, no note, no label, just a silver key. I took it to a tech friend, someone who owed me a favor and wouldn't ask questions. It took an hour to unlock. Inside were five video files, all labeled with names I didn't recognize, except the last one. Jennings_3_final.move. I clicked play. Carla appeared on screen, same red dress, same cold elegance. She sat in a chair, looking directly into the lens. No smile this time, just truth. I'm sure you have questions, she said. You always did. That was part of your file. She took a breath. You were never the target. You were the test. I leaned forward. We needed someone who could be manipulated, but who would eventually fight back. Someone smart enough to sense the game, but emotional enough to play anyway. You were perfect. She shifted slightly in her seat. Men like you, men with guilt, with ego, with a savior complex, are useful. But not all of you survive. Some fall in love. Some kill. Some vanish. She paused. But you? You burned it all. She smiled now, soft and real. You didn't just pass. You became something new. The screen cut to black. Then a logo faded in. Greywood Initiative. Archetype Candidate. Status. Promoted. And beneath that, Welcome to Phase 4. I stood frozen. The test wasn't about betrayal. It was about recruitment. I hadn't escaped the system. I had been indoctrinated. That night, someone rang the doorbell. An envelope was left on my porch. Inside, a key card, a plane ticket to Berlin, and a note written in the same hand as before. This time, you're the one doing the watching. I sat in my car for hours, staring at that ticket, wondering if this was the end of the nightmare, or the beginning of something much darker. One thing was certain. My wife didn't care if I cheated. She just wanted me home by 2 a.m. Because after that, I stopped being her husband and became part of something else entirely.